We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
So I want to start by welcoming everyone again. I am Tracy Weeks, the Executive Director for CETA. I am joined today by Ann Flynn from the National School Boards Association and Rick Gaisford from the great state of Utah, who are going to join me today in a discussion around looking at different tools for implementation around building digital learning environments. I also do want to encourage everyone to join our community around Essential Elements for Digital Content. It is completely free, and you can engage with other folks who are talking digital content. So it's a great community to be a part of, and we hope that you will join us there. Many of you may be looking to earn a CE certificate. If you did register for this webinar, you will be emailed your certificate after 24 hours, as long as you registered and logged in today with your email address. But if you didn't and you still want a certificate, not a problem. If you're watching this as a recording or you are accessing it just by phone or you didn't sign in, there is a quiz that you can take to access and get your certificate. And it is in the community, the edweb.net/digital content. So that's a nice way to get you to go in there and take a peek at least. So I hope you will. So now we're going to actually kick things off with a little poll just so we can get to know each other. So I'm going to have the EdWeb team launch the poll. And if you are accessing this from a mobile device, I do believe that you will not be able to see the poll. Or if you're on the phone, of course, you can't. Just bear with us. But if you are accessing this from a desktop, you should see a poll around your role related to digital learning. So we're just trying to get a sense of who we have in there. And, you know, and thank you for those of you who do fall into the other category and you're adding it into the chat. We're limited to five choices. So it's we always feel like we're going to hurt somebody's feelings, no matter who we choose. And so we try to change it up depending on which of the topics we're doing. So thank you for... So we do see several technology specialists and media specialists, which makes complete and perfect sense. So we are so glad that you are here. All right. Well, it looks like we are dominated by teachers and others today. So thank you and welcome. And we're glad that you're here. So we'll go ahead and go on to the next slide. Let's see here. Oh, there we go. All right. So we are sponsoring this. CETA is sponsoring this particular webinar. We are excited to have it here. EdWeb has been a great partner to work with for these webinars. So glad to be able to join in and do this today with you all. So I'm going to jump right into this. One of the big reasons we're here today is that CETA has taken the opportunity to take a tool that we've had actually since 2015, which was the Guide to Implementing Digital Learning. And some of you may have accessed that tool in the past. And with partnerships with some, with the U.S. Department of Education, along with a number of other organizations, that have an interest in this area, we've been able to do a refresh, and in fact, we're looking at this as a multi-phase refresh, and I'll talk more about those pieces, and we'll do a little walkthrough. But I hope that you'll find several tools that you'll be able to use, and these are tools actually that can be used whether you're at the state, the district, the school, or the classroom level. I think that you will be able to find elements and items that you will be able to use here. So we'll kick things off with, I'll do a guide to digital learning overview. We'll walk through the tool. And then we'll have Rick and Ann come on and talk about work that they're doing both in Utah and with the National School Boards Association, and a little bit more about some of the tools. So for right now, wave goodbye to Rick and Ann. They're going to turn off their webcams and they're going to mute themselves. And we're going to have them back when it gets to their part of the presentation. But I do want to point out, you see a URL at the bottom of this slide, digitallearning.ceta.org, and CETA is S-E-T-D-A. We get folks who reverse those two letters quite often, so digitallearning.ceta.org. We will walk through that live, but you're welcome to go in and take a peek now, if you would like to. But let me just tell you, if you're not familiar with CETA, just a little bit about our organization. CETA was founded in 2001, and we, our main focus, our main goal is to really, help provide, service and support to those who work at the state level. Often that's in a state education agency, but there are other affiliate type places that they might be working as well, that are really, you know, working to support folks, educators across their states when it comes to education technology, digital learning, however you want to phrase it. But we provide our members with a forum for advocacy around policy and practice, and that could be federal, state, and local advocacy. We do professional learning opportunities. We have partnerships with the private sector. But I do know that one of the things that our members treasure most is just being able to connect with others that are in similar roles in different states. So they're able to connect and talk to others who are dealing with the same problems of practice that they are. If you're not already following us on Twitter, we hope that you will, and you can follow us at CETA, S-E-T-D-A. Our members include state leaders, as I mentioned, and we include all 50 states and along with the District of Columbia and U.S. territories like the Virgin Islands, Guam, and American Samoa. Our states join, and they can have as many participants as they like. We also have affiliates that may be regional or statewide organizations that are also supporting educators across their state when it comes to digital learning. If that sounds like something you do, or you're a member of one of those statewide organizations and you would like to be able to connect with us and connect with others, I do hope you'll either reach out to me, or you can go to our website, ceta.org/affiliate. We would love to get you connected and involved with us. And we also have quite a number of private sector partners, and this could be for-profit or nonprofit organizations that really align with our mission and priorities. And we have more information on ceta.org/partners. Missy Green is also in the chat lurking around in there, and she can answer questions for you as well. So we really want to find a place for folks who want to be involved. And welcome you to come reach out to us, and we can talk to you even more deeply about how you can engage with CETA. But if you're not at a state level organization, if you're at a school or a district or even in a classroom, you can still interact with the resources that CETA has developed, as they are open resources. We make them widely available. If you go to the CETA website, you can access many of them. And we hit on quite a number of items. We have one item called DMAPS, the dmaps.ceta.org, which has just been updated in the last month. That really is a database. If you want to find out what other states are doing around digital materials, whether it's procurement, policy, acquisition, a number of things, you can go and take a look at your state and other states. And certainly if you look at your own state and you realize that something needs to be adjusted, please let us know, and we will get that fixed. We also look at things around how states do procurement for digital materials. We have a guide to quality instructional materials. So if you're trying to make that shift from print materials to digital materials, and you're trying to figure out, well, how do we know what is quality out there? We have some thought-provoking questions that you can walk through. And again, that can work at whatever level of education you are serving, that can really help you have some good conversations around that. And then we also have our broadband imperative too, which really looks on at equity of access, how we make sure that all of our schools have access to high quality broadband. So take a look at those resources, share them with your friends. And we're also really looking at opportunities for digital learning. How are our states and our districts and our schools really digging into digital learning? What does that look like? And this is one of the things that we're trying to take a good look at with this new guide that we've called Transformative Digital Learning. As I mentioned, we originally had the Guide to Implementing Digital Learning in 2015. This is new work that we were able to do. Initially, it was work that we did in partnership with the Office of Education Technology in the U.S. Department of Education. And then CETA has been able to take it and expand upon it. So certainly not everything that's in here has been endorsed by the U.S. Department of Education, but we were glad to have their partnership when we kicked off this process. So I do also want to share that we did have a technical working group that we engaged throughout our process of development. And as you can see, we involved a number of CETA members that were at the State Departments of Education, along with several partner organizations. We had Anne from the National School Boards Association, Common Sense Education, COSIN, and of course the U.S. Department of Education. So really glad to have a lot of different eyes taking a look at this as we developed it out. And here's the other good news. Everything you see today, the guide that we'll show you and any of the resources that you find in it are open resources. And in fact, you'll find most of them you'll be able to download even as a Word doc and be able to customize for your needs. Your state, district, school, however you'd like to do it. And you can take pieces of this, and let's say that you don't need to look at every single item that's in this guide, but you want to focus in on one particular area, that's fine. You customize, modularize this however you need. We want this to be meaningful for you, and at least give you a good place to start so that you don't have to do all of the research and gathering of resources on your own. So we do hope that you'll take advantage of this and use it however you see fit. To give you an idea, we do have six areas in particular that we focus on. We look at planning, operations, professional learning, technical support, instructional materials, and equity and access. And actually, we do a deep dive in all of those areas. Again, when you think about modularizing, your training that you would want to do with other folks, you can pick and choose. And even within each of those areas, you can pick and choose those particular items. John Carver, the link for the guide, it is digitallearning.ceta.org. And I know that one of my friends will type that into the chat so you can see that again. So we will go ahead. Actually, here we go. digitallearning.ceta.org. We will go ahead and actually I'm going to turn off my webcam and I'm going to take us into and actually show you. All right, there we go. So hopefully you are seeing the screen, the actual guide right now. And you see, we do still have, good, I'm getting confirmation, thank you. So you see that we have our six areas here that I just showed you on the screen. We also have them across the top. And I do want to point out one thing. You see that we limit the number of colors that we use on this. CETA does a lot of work around accessible materials, and we believe that that's not just something that we need to focus on in the special education community. We think that they need to be accessible for all learners. So we really do try to gear and develop our resources to make sure they are inclusive of all. But you can click into any of these areas. So for instance, if you wanted to look at instructional materials, if we went into the instructional materials area, you would see a facilitator guide so that if you wanted to be able to conduct a training with a group, whether that is state, district, school level, what have you, you would be able to download the guide. Again, an open resource that you can completely customize, but it gives you an idea of where to start We've even included little activities you can do, small group, large group activities you can do to help center folks, what audiences you might want to do. But you also see that there are a number of subcategories, such as quality materials, accessibility, selection, curation. And I could click on any of these tabs and see that there are a number of subcategories that we could work through. We have the facilitator guide. And on many of these pages, you will also see links to resources by other organizations that are meaningful in this area. So for instance, if we went to operations and interoperability, which is one of the areas that CETA is particularly interested in, you will see several other guides, both ours. You see one from Curriculum Associates. And as you dig in, you'll actually see links to other places and links out to other big players in those areas. So I am certainly not going to deep dive into each of these areas other than to say they are here and you should explore them. If you walk away with anything, note that it is completely open. You can go in and customize it. But there is a sixth tab over here called stakeholders, and Anne Flynn's going to talk to us a little bit more about this. But we also assume that in those first five areas, the planning, operations, professional learning, instructional materials, and equity of access, those are really typically items and artifacts you would use when you're talking to other educators and trying to bring them up to speed in any of these areas. But we also are very aware that there are a lot of other stakeholders out there that it is really important that we engage with as an education community and help them understand why your school or district or state may be engaging more deeply in digital learning. And so we have developed a series of stakeholder toolkits, and you'll actually see that we've got 10 different stakeholder groups, and that you can click on any of these and come in, and it'll give you a little overview. But each of these communities has a toolkit that you can click on, and I don't know that it'll share that with you right here, but there's also a communication packet and a slide deck that you could start with. So what we're trying to do, and again, all customizable resources, but depending on the group that you are looking at interacting with, it will customize the topics that group might be most interested in. So for instance, when you talk with the business community, they're going to be particularly interested in, what are the business and workforce requirements that come into this? How do we engage with schools and districts? As opposed to parents. Parents are going to be concerned about the safety of their children when it comes to digital learning and privacy issues. So we dig into that a little bit. Students want to have a voice. Superintendents are going to be looking at, building community. They're going to be looking at budgets. So we get into different topics depending on the community we're looking at. And in just a few minutes, Anne is going to take us through a deeper dive specifically into the school board toolkit. So you'll get to see a little bit more what that looks like. So I am going to stop my screen share now and ask Ed Webb to reload the slide deck. And here it comes. Thank you. And now I'm going to actually shift it over to my colleague, Rick Gaisford, who is one of our fantastic state leaders. And he's going to tell you more about what Utah has been doing around digital learning. And he certainly has been able to take a look at the facilitator guides and the different tools that we have in here all throughout development, and we'll be able to tell you more about why he sees those as important for states and districts. So, Rick, I will hand it over to you. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Tracy, and good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are joining in from. It's a pleasure to be with you and to just tell you a little bit about some of the things that we have done here in Utah on our path and journey to digital learning. And I would assume that is the case for all of you, that you are all somewhere on this path and journey to fully realize the power of technology in teaching and learning. And so I want to just give a little bit of history first of Utah and some of our path that we have taken. I think that there are lessons learned, and I'm hoping that by the end of this, what you will really see is the power of this transformative digital learning toolkit that we're talking about, and that it will allow you to avoid some pitfalls that I think have occurred in our state along the way. And I think, as you know, as we look at particularly with digital teaching and learning, this is an expensive endeavor, and there's never going to be enough funding. And so what we want to do is to do it right, all of us. And so I would share a little bit. We've been doing this for a long time here in Utah. This actually started back when we had an educational technology initiative back in 1990. That was passed by the Utah legislature, and it actually lasted 10 years and provided some funding. And the whole purpose was get boxes, computers on desks in schools, build computer labs. Didn't take into account that teachers really didn't know how to use it. Didn't really take into account the fact that what was the goal that you were planning on doing with these machines. It was, we need to get technology into schools. So it was a moderately successful thing, because what it did do is it did spur innovation and getting people starting to think, what is it going to take to support these kinds of things? And then what is it going to, and what could be the possibilities from it? And particularly to start building the infrastructure that is so absolutely critical to support technology in schools. And so during the life of this program, it funded about $40 million for Utah schools. It brought the internet into all the schools. It established a statewide education network, the Utah Education and Telehealth Network. It established some standards for what we would be doing as far as bandwidth for schools, and to be able to grow that bandwidth, to be able to meet future needs. And all of those were really, really good things. But there were some things that were also lacking. In 2005, it was sort of a pivotal year. It was a little after the Education Technology Initiative. In fact, we'd gone about 3 or 4 years where there hadn't been any state funding. And so it was just technology was moving forward, but at a slower pace, and all being done on local dollars in schools and in districts and that. But in 2005, the Legislative Auditor General was assigned to do an audit on education technology. And they came to our office and we talked to them briefly about it. And they said, you know, we really don't want to go out and do count boxes, because what we do know is that technology gets older and it's going to change. And we would have spent a lot of time doing this audit, and it really won't mean anything a year from now or 2 years from now. And so what they decided to do was to do a performance audit on education technology and to what would be the optimal things, the optimal conditions for making this transformation to digital learning successful. And so they did their audit, and they really came up with three key components that are essential to the effective and efficient use of technology. One is access to technology. The second is professional learning. And the third is technical support. Now, I want you just to, I'm just going to go back a couple of slides here. But just think about what you saw here, a few minutes ago as Tracy was talking about it. Planning, operations, professional learning, technical support. That's why I was so intrigued when we were putting this together over the last few years and then renewing it, is that it's hitting on the very same key concepts that must be present. Now, the other thing that the auditor talked about in this audit was, is that you have to work on all of these things at the same time. You can't do two, you can't do two of them and then not do the other, not do the third one. That you have to be considering all of these all of the time. Well, that served us well. And then back, we really started as a state in here to really move forward with digital teaching and learning back in 2014, when the Speaker of the Speaker of the House of the Utah State Legislature proposed a $300 million investment in technology in schools. Now, here again, this was one of those lessons learned. It was, yeah, we're going to put a device in every kid's hand. What we're going to do with those devices, nobody's really thought about. And how, what, you know, teachers having professional learning wasn't really considered in that. But we were going to get some devices and build up some networks and do some really great things. Luckily, for at least from my perspective, that bill did not pass. But it certainly started the conversation that we need to start looking at how do we transform education to meet the needs of today's students and to meet the needs of today's economy in our local communities in that. And so it came back in 2015, a new bill, Senate Bill 222, and it was not asking for as nearly as much money, about $30 million. But we had a lot more positive response. We had studied some things during the year. We had identified those three key components that needed to be focused on, but we still hadn't convinced everyone. And so when it finally came time to fund various pieces of legislation, we didn't get the funding. However, what did come from that was that that came out of that was that that bill was substituted for a bill that would create a master plan for the state of Utah to really move forward in transformative digital learning. And it even provided funding, something completely unheard of, to put together that master plan. And I'll talk about that in just a few minutes, what came from all of that. And then after we went through that year, 2015, we went back to the 2016 legislature and House Bill 277 was sponsored, and $15 million, 10 of that ongoing funding, and then $5 million one-time funding was appropriated to implement the master plan. It took a process. But again, if you go back and you look at the transformative planning guide that Tracy was talking about, you can see that planning is such a key element of that. And being able to have things in place, because that's when leaders and policymakers will be able to see what it is that you're doing and be able to see the vision that you have, and then they're willing to put the resources out there to make that happen. So what has happened since then? Well, in 2017, we received an additional $10 million as we were just beginning the implementation of the program. And then this year in the 2018 legislature, the $10 million was doubled to $20 million to really start moving us forward with really transforming all classrooms in the state to be able to take advantage of digital teaching and learning. So when we did this, what this called for was a qualified grant program. In other words, not a competitive program, but that every LEA, district or charter school in the state of Utah, could qualify for funding from this money if they met and put together a plan that met the elements of the master plan. And then on the graphic that you can see over there on the right-hand side, there were 12 key components and 54 elements spread across those that all had to be addressed as a part of that planning process. They had to do a readiness assessment to find out where they were at. We used, in Utah, they were able to either use the Future Ready tool or a tool that was actually developed in North Carolina, the North Carolina Readiness Assessment, to show that where they were at so that we could see where they're at as a baseline and then be able to demonstrate where they were going to where they were planning on going. Second thing they had to do was to do an inventory of all of the technology that they currently had, not just the computers, but all of the infrastructure that they had. We did that statewide with some of the funding that we received from the Master Planning Grant, and were able to identify all of the technology in every single school in the state of Utah and the network infrastructure that was there. And that was that's been very helpful in building out our state network, which does provide connectivity to all of the schools in the state of Utah at a very, very high level. They had to set goals. Where did they want to get with this plan? They had to set up an implementation, how they were going to do that this year, next year, and the following year. They had to identify software and learning tools that they would be implementing along the way. How are they going to address personal learning, digital citizenship, data privacy, professional learning? How they were going to monitor their implementation of their plan? What infrastructure did they need? Were their networks, their wireless networks inside of their building sufficient? Would they be able to do that? How are they going to address that? I remember going back to that audit and then going back to what the planning guide talks about, technical support. It means nothing to teachers in the classroom if the technology is not working. And if something, if a student's computer goes down, are they going to get it back in less than a day, a week, a month? All of those would have implications for both the teacher and the student if something goes wrong. How are you going to address technical support? And then data and security policies. All of this data that's out there, there again, we have to start talking about those. And then finally, what's the budget that they're having for this? Not just the budget from the state funds, but what are the local funds that you're putting, that were being pushed towards this as well? So that was the master plan. And the way that we did that. Now, at the same time as you looked at the timeline and that, you would see that the first tool that we put together on transformative digital learning was done in 2015, about the same time we were doing our master plan. And so when all of this came out at the end, it was an affirmation that this tool matches exactly the same kinds of things that we were thinking about. And that's why I'm so excited to talk about this tool, is because now, 3 years into our implementation, almost 3 years, going into our third year of implementation here in Utah, it works. This kind of planning tool and process and the kinds of things that it's focused on do work. As a part of this, we had to then go out and work with the districts and the LEAs around the state of Utah. We did startup boot camps where we had a little bit what Ann will talk about. We invited teams from every district or charter school that wanted to participate, that had to include the superintendent or the executive director, they had to have their curriculum director, their technology director, other staff that we had, and we highly encouraged them to have board members as a part of their teams as well, because having that local board in sync with what the district or the school is going to be doing around this project is paramount and highly important. What did they have to do? What are the innovations that came out of this program? Well, LEAs developed local student learning outcomes for a goal set. They're leveraging local expertise to drive the process. We've been out and we've visited every one of the awardees, 68 last spring, and we just finished up meetings last week with all 68 of them again. We've held summits. We've organized them into PLCs around other topics to be able to support them. We're working with our partners such as Learn and as an EdTech management system and the Materia Group for the evaluation of our program, so that we can be able to show that it's actually making a difference in teaching and learning, that it really is beginning to transform education. So again, as we look at coming to the end of all of this, the transformative digital learning guide is really congruent with what we've done here in Utah and Utah's master plan. And then as we look at the facilitator guides, which is really one of the things that These are new. They didn't exist then back then. These are really going to be most helpful. And I'm going to, as these are now becoming available, be using these for LEAs to be able to have deeper conversations about where they're currently at in their program and the kinds of things that they hope to be able to do in the future with their program. And these will be able to help them to have deeper discussions as they revamp their goals and do that. Because in next year, all of the LEAs that are currently participating will then have to re-up their participation. The good news is we have $20 million to start with next year, plus the local funds that are being put towards this. And hopefully we'll be able to grow that into even more. So I'm highly encouraging everyone to take a very good deep dive into this tool. I think it will be most useful for you. And you'll be seeing a lot more information, particularly about the facilitator guides coming forward. And with that, I will turn the time, I believe, to Anne.
All right, let's see. And actually, I think we want to do one more. I do want to pause on. Sorry, Anne, you can stay there. We're gonna just do a quick chat, little activity, a little brain break here. But wanted to make sure that Rick's contact information was available. But what we would look for all of our participants to kind of reflect on, you know, in the chat area. Yeah, what are your go-to resources for digital learning implementation? What are those essential tools that you have found really helpful out there? Partially because we want to make sure to include them in this guide. And if it's something that you have found to be particularly helpful, we want to make sure to point others to it as well. You know, we've got many of I think probably the bigger ones out there, but if you know of one, and even if your state or district has developed one that you think has been particularly helpful, we would love to know about it and put a link. So if you can, put in there a great go-to resource for digital learning implementation in the chat, that would be fantastic. And we'll start capturing those. So now I would love to invite Anne Flynn, my good friend from the National School Boards Association. And Anne has been really working with education technology for a good long time and really has seen the evolution from what I would really call the old school ed tech to sort of this digital age we're in now where it's becoming more pervasive across what we do in our personal lives. But I'm going to turn it over to Anne to talk about her work with the school boards and education technology and our stakeholder toolkit. So thank you, Anne.
Thanks so much, Tracy. Really appreciate it. I do feel a bit old when we talk about this from the old days to now. We were working at NSBA in education technology before there was an internet and before anyone had an email address. So really feeling a bit dated, but proud of the association that back in the late 1980s, it recognized that this was going to be something significant for education and began that work through the establishment of the Technology Leadership Network that reached out to some of the very earliest adopters in this space. And through that work over the years, we were certainly one of the national associations that were at the table with NEA and some others early on in the 90s to advocate for the creation of E-Rate and continue to support the expansion of it. Over the years, we've done research programs, produced books, briefs, site visits, and for 24 years actually hosted a conference that was focused specifically on technology. And today continue to do our recognition programs and our digital district surveys to remind people that this is, as one tech director taught me early on, that this is an evolution, not a revolution, and that it is a journey that will never be done as the technology innovations continue to grow. For us, working with school board members, sometimes people are a bit confused exactly about what the role of the board is, what they do, who these people are that are sort of talked about mythically sometimes. NSBA is a federation of our state school boards associations. Each state has an organization that is most directly responsible for training the board members in their states. But as a whole, there's roughly 13,600 districts in the country with over 90,000 school board members, mostly who are elected. And I am so excited about this tool and the inclusion of school board members as a part of this dialogue, because so often great initiatives that have taken place in this 2+ decades I've been working in this field really target teachers, which by all means, teachers are incredibly important and do amazing things with students. But time and again, I've seen where amazing teachers continue to operate as an island of excellence or a pocket of excellence in an environment that didn't fully understand what they were trying to do, nor provide the supports to further their work or make it more systemic. So, and even in the vendor community, there's been this, you know, focus on the teachers, but yet so many of the tools and infrastructure and resources that are needed to make technology and digital transformation work in a district require that higher level visionary, both support philosophically as well as for funding. So that the fact that this resource is addressing that important component of the whole picture is just makes me pleased to be involved with it. So just very quickly, so in case you're curious about those board members, we just did a study with in partnership with K-12 Insight, which says 1 in 4 board members are retired. 50% are female. The demographics are roughly spelled out on the screen. They spend 16% of them say more than 40 hours a week on board business. So the value of a tool like this serves a couple of purposes. One in four retired, so they may very well be a bit further removed from the use of technologies in the careers that they once held. And secondly, they're very busy. If they are still working, many of them, most of them have full-time jobs and consequently are trying to keep up to speed and learn these things. So what we learned over the years of doing our tech conferences is that tech directors, superintendents, and others who could educate a board champion and help explain these things in lay terms and the relevance that they had to the work of the district, the more successful they were in moving digital initiatives forward. But most importantly, the board members are there to govern. They hire the superintendent. They work collaboratively to develop that vision, align the resources to implement that vision, approve the budgets, and then they are that bridge to the local community. In this recent study we did, we looked at priorities across 5 areas, but one of the 5 areas was technology. And certainly the technology considerations that are on the minds of board members around the country is providing training and support for the effective use of the technology and data systems, because in far too many cases, the enthusiasm, just as Rick and others have said, was to get the devices, whatever they were, the device du jour, a desktop, a laptop, a tablet, in the hands of students and teachers, but without necessarily making sure they knew what to do with them. And so that's certainly on the minds of our board members, as well as producing the cutting edge career tech opportunities that we see increasingly talked about as an important pathway for students. The lessons that we've learned and that are, I think, well reflected in this toolkit work that CETA has put together is absolutely leadership is really key. If I've hosted site visits in over 80 districts since I've been doing this job, and without fail, when you go in and you see a school board working in collaboration, in partnership with their superintendent, with their tech team, you start to see these amazing things that happen in one classroom replicated and becoming systemic and sustainable across a district. Consistently, those districts have remembered to put the learning goals and learning objectives at the front of their technology conversation, not at the rear. So often, again, early years, it was, we've just got to get it there. We're not sure what we're going to do with it, but it seems like something that's important. And perhaps making those early efforts to get the connectivity, the wiring, I don't think any of us had a crystal ball. But now, even more important is to put that vision for learning in front of any technology conversation. as I said earlier, but the boards, when you look across a lot of resources that are developed, it's for the teachers, for the superintendent, yet these are the people who have to sell it to their community and find the resources to support it. And so school boards were certainly one of the stakeholder groups. And as Tracy said earlier, these toolkits really went after speaking specifically to the needs of each stakeholder group. And I was fond of them in particular because they actually, one day we were talking about how to put the information out there that would be most useful. And there's so much in this space. Sometimes it feels like drinking from a fire hose when you start looking for resources. And so the toolkits were designed to sort of weed that down in a way that would help board members or the other tool, other stakeholder groups with their own toolkits be able to hone in on the exact materials that are necessary to support them. And we even talked about, what if a board member were asked in the grocery store checkout line from a concerned parent who said something like, you know, I'm worried about my child spending too much time on the computer screen. Give that board member a couple of really solid resources to respond and in a set of lay terms that they're comfortable articulating that to a community member. Or someone who said, I'm worried about someone having too much access to my child's data. And again, providing a board member with some key answers. But this same model that I'm talking about on the school board member toolkit, if you go to any one of the other toolkits, the librarians, the CIOs, the superintendents, each of them have those scenario type questions and content put in context to provide that sort of immediate, most direct resource for what questions that that person's responsible for asking or answering. In addition, the toolkits have included, in the case of the school board toolkit, we were able to tap into video resources that we had as part of a Learning First grant that talked just about the role of digital transformation and being college and career ready. So there's 2 or 3 minute videos that could be put together and used either standalone or as a part of the communications packet that's been created. And in each of the toolkit, there's resources that look at sample letters, sample slide decks, and other resources that individuals can use with these different stakeholder groups. Because with those 13,600 school districts in this country, so many of them don't have the staff time, the staff capacity or bandwidth to make this kind of work customizable on their own research efforts. And with this being designed for individual districts and school leaders to customize to their own specific needs, the heavy lifting is really already done. So I urge you to take a deep dive into each of those toolkits to make sure that you're tapping into those resources. If you're meeting with one of those stakeholder groups, whether it's parents or librarians, or if it's school personnel, to pair the facilitator's guide with these toolkits and capitalize on these free resources that have been developed for you. Tracy, with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Anne. That was great. And again, you know, Anne did the deep dive down into the school board toolkit. We've got 9 other ones, depending on the group you're looking for. So really, I encourage you to take a deep dive into there. I'm going to leave this URL up here for a moment while we start to answer questions. And I'm actually going to ask Rick and Anne if they will come back on and join me as we take some questions. I have been kind of trying to capture some of the ones that we've had in the chat area that I thought would be good for sharing with folks. And one of the ones that that I definitely wanted to hit on, Michael J asked, you know, most of the ed tech strategies for implementation that were shared here have been part of best practices for the past 30 plus years. All great stuff. How can the education community make these best practices the baseline state of the art so we can move our practices ahead? And he aimed it at CETA, but and I'll give our answer, but I would love for Rick and Anne I think you're absolutely right, Michael. We have been talking about many of these things for many years. Here is my perception of one of the key differences in where we can go now. And I think both Rick and Ann hit on this a bit. I think for a long time, these topics and conversations have been held in small groups of dedicated individuals who were interested in using digital learning in their classrooms or in their schools. But we often did, I think what Rick alluded to, where he talked about, we're going to buy the boxes first and then figure out what to do with them later. How many of you have seen your schools and districts take that approach? I know I've been in schools and districts that have absolutely done that. And to be fair, you got to have the boxes and you got to have the bandwidth to do things. But simultaneously, the planning and helping your instructional leadership have a vision for how these are going to be used for teaching and learning makes a huge difference. In my opinion, if we want to go from let's have all of these devices so that we can go find a couple of resources out there to supplement what we're doing versus, you know, I really want to be able to personalize learning for students. What does that take? What does that mean? How do I have to engage each child differently with resources, methodologies, and so on? And then what are the devices and learning infrastructure pieces that I need to have in place to be able to do that? So Ann or Rick, as you have worked with your stakeholders, what have you seen in terms of how we move this needle and not feel like we're having the same conversation over and over?
Well, I think for our stakeholders, and a good reminder, and that hopefully this toolkit and facilitator's guide will be useful in that regard. Unlike some of our tech directors and superintendents that I've had the pleasure of working with for decades, literally having these conversations, school board members are subject to local elections. And so there's always a new group of board members coming on in many districts who need to be brought up to speed. And so helping give them a briefing and make sure that they understand the direction a district is moving and why a district's moving that way, is always an important need to keep re-educating. It's, I won't say a swinging door, but it's a changing door of people coming around that board table and staying true to a vision. And that's part of the reason the vision and the planning is so important and needs to be so inclusive, not only of just that board and the superintendent and their top cabinet level people, but of their community, with that agreement of what do we as a community really want the students to know and be able to do when they graduate, and then backward engineer that to what the right technologies are to accomplish that. I use a favorite story. You know, none of us probably would say, oh my God, Kindles are the absolute best tool to make digital learning happen. However, one particular district had a real problem with summer reading drop off in their upper elementary kids. They just simply weren't getting reading enough. So they bought a set of Kindles and loaded them with age-appropriate fiction and nonfiction, sent them home with, you know, elementary kids over a summer. And that was the perfect tool for that particular learning goal and objective. And so I think that's one of the ones I go back to make sure that you're letting the learning drive it.
Great. Rick, and even thinking about that and maybe even the visioning process for districts, which includes certainly the school board, as Ann mentioned, but when districts are thinking about this, how do they help vision? And also, how do hiring practices make a difference in the implementation here?
I'll sort of look to both of those really and try to be brief on my answer. First, to the other, what happened here in Utah, and I think is what's important, is to get past that small clusters and to make it mainstream. It's a part of our program. We required superintendent and leadership and the leadership of the schools, meaning school principals, to participate in the program. They had to be a part of the team that was writing it. It was a requirement to attend the two-day boot camp that we held. And that has really changed a lot of practice inside of districts, to where now they're meeting and talking about not just they're talking about learning every week, but also digital teaching and learning and how that impacts teaching and learning. They've put a by having to go through a comprehensive assessment of where they were at and what they and that they were able to see they weren't as far down the path as they thought they were, and therefore now they've started to put additional resources to that. In the case of some of the schools going to the hiring practices, and that, although it hasn't been systemic in changing, everybody has to have this, these kind of skills, but for a lot of the districts, they've been implementing it in one or two schools to start with, or, a few of the schools in their district. And they've had to talk to the teachers and say, if you're not willing to make these kind of changes, we will assist you either by transferring you to another school, or we'll give you a good recommendation, to be able to go and apply for a job. We do have in Utah an education technology endorsement, which we really let them focus on, and I have the LEAs, the districts and the charters can come up with their own program so that teachers can demonstrate that they have that competency. We've also been working with leadership and bringing in from the Friday Institute, the learning and the leading and blended and digital learning program, and providing that across the state as well to be able to help make all of this mainstream.
Thank you. We did have one other question from John about the role of teacher prep programs. And I will say that is one of the stakeholder groups that we developed a toolkit for, because absolutely we think there needs to be a connection between how we are preparing our teachers and then how we continue to engage with them. So I think we're about to hit our limit on time, and I hate that because there's some great questions coming in, so I really do appreciate this. But please make sure you bookmark digitallearning.ceta.org. Get in there and let us know how to make it better. You can either contact me directly, Trace or tweeks@ceta.org. I know my email address has been put several times in the chat. Let us know A, if you were able to use it, or B, if we're missing the boat on some things. We want to make it useful for you. So thanks again to both Anne and for Rick for being here today and sharing all the great efforts that you have going on and how you have engaged with these tools. We appreciate all of your help. Again, go to digitallearning.ceta.org. And don't forget to get your certificate. If you are watching this by recording, or if you did not log in with your email address and pre-register, you can take a quiz. If you go to edweb.net/digitalcontent, and you can earn your CE certificate. So thanks again to EdWeb, for hosting us today. And, again, just one more reminder about our digital content. So thank you, and we will go ahead and stop the recording now.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.